This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry. Your speaker is Vin Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry. This tape is one in a series called On the Air. If memory serves correctly, this is tape number 20 and in that series. And it consists of a slightly edited, which means we took out the commercials, edition of my appearance on the Pat Campbell Show out of Erie, New York, his program called The Right Way. And my appearance on this show was engendered by a recent statement that is recent, made in October 1996 by John Paul II regarding the, shall we say, quote-unquote, theory of evolution. I was asked to comment on it, make some general statements, and respond to questions from the audience. That's basically all you need to know. However, I will add at this time that the master tape supplied to me by Pat Campbell does have some slight, shall I say, volume variations, which I have attempted to enhance by our reproduction mechanical means at ARM. And it's not perfect, but I think this will make it, shall I say, more easily listenable to. And that's really it. Thank you for obtaining the tape. Hope you enjoyed listening to it. And, of course, as always, I'm quite interested in your comments, suggestions, anything but your criticisms. Thank you.
With Pat Campbell.
Good afternoon, Erie, Pennsylvania. Welcome back to Erie's Voice of Choice, the mighty flagship 1330. As always, folks, delighted to have you on board. This, of course, a fabulous Friday edition of The Right Way, October 25th, 1996. Since it is a Friday, you know what that means, our highly successful weekly feature, Outrage of the Week. We are temporarily going to postpone Outrage. We'll get into that in the 4 o'clock hour. I'll tell you why in a minute here. First of all, I want to get into a couple of programming notes. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. residential and congressional as well. And we briefly touched on what appears to be a disturbing statement that was released yesterday, covered by the press, where apparently the Pope has accepted Darwin's theory of evolution. And the story has created quite a furor among Catholics, among fundamentalists, etc. I want to share the story with you out of the USA Today, if I may, briefly. It's just a few paragraphs, so please bear with me. And we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to try to make sense of this story and find out what Catholics believe, what they do or don't believe, and how they differ from some of their Christian brethren, if they differ at all, in particular with fundamentalists. The story out of the USA Today, and excuse me, I think I coughed on air there, or cleared my throat. Pope John Paul II says he sees no conflict between religious teachings and the theory of evolution, but his statement was criticized in some religious circles. In a message to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, the Pope wrote this week, "Today, new knowledge leads to recognition of the theory of evolution as more than a hypothesis." Now, defenders of Charles Darwin's theory say the Pope's statement will reassure Christians who seek to reconcile their religious beliefs with their understanding of science. But among those not reassured were proponents of creationism. The creation theory holds that God created man essentially in his present form. Darwin said humans developed over millions of years from less advanced forms of life. Another theory, which the Pope appears to support, is that God guided the process outlined by Charles Darwin. It's a complete compromise of God's words, so says Mike Zovoth of Answers in Genesis, a nonprofit Christian ministry in Florence, Kentucky, that conducts nationwide seminars on creation. It directly contradicts the Bible. It can't be compatible with the Christian position based on biblical principle and biblical understanding. Others disagree. While the Pope says religion and science are compatible, he also is saying that the development of the spiritual aspect of human life cannot be explained scientifically. So says Sister Marianne Walsh of the U.S. Catholic Conference. The Pope has made a very clear statement that there is no conflict between science and religion. So says Marlene Matsumara with the National Center for Science Education in California. That's a group that monitors threats to the teaching of evolution in schools. The statement won't change Catholic education. We start with the premise that all creation came from God. Beyond that, it's a scientific issue, so said Leonard DiFiore, president of the National Catholic Education Association in Washington, D.C. Now, but supporters of creationism fear the effects of the Pope's statement. Because he, referring to the Pope, believes this, he's going to cause a lot of others to believe it. Just because people want to believe stories like this, not because it's scientifically valid, so said William Hoche of the Institute for Creation Research in San Diego. He went on to say, I think it's pretty sad. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. When we come back, joining us via phone somewhere in New York State, our friend Vin Lewis, Catholic apologist, to help us make sense of this confusing story. We'll be back with more, including your calls, at 835-1330 right after this.
Campbell.
Welcome back, folks, as we continue here in hour number one. Those of you waiting for Outrage of the Week, we'll kick that off in hour number two here. We're joined now via phone by a good friend of ours, Vin Lewis, a Catholic apologist who has been on the program on a regular basis here to help shed some light on this confusing story that we're seeing appear in the press. Vin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me. God bless you, and may your ratings increase.
That's something we can both agree on there. Vin, for those who haven't had the opportunity to hear you in the past, tell them a little bit about yourself, your ministry, and what exactly is a Catholic apologist?
Well, he's a guy who sort of protests outrages of the week when they're directed against Catholic teaching or the revealed truth as given by our Lord to the apostles. And what he attempts to do is to convince those people that they who are making charges against the Catholic faith of a negative nature are wrong, and that we hope this will ultimately lead them to the right path.
All right. Now, what do you make of this whole story here?
It's the outrage of the millennium.
All right.
Notice one thing, though. I took some notes while you were speaking. Number one, now we always got to say this, if we've got the information correctly,
right.
Because we have to understand that the press frequently distorts things, and this is probably in translation anyway. But number one, it says new discoveries. Well, which new discoveries? For heaven's sakes, John Paul II, give them exactly what new discoveries you are talking about.
That was the first thing I thought of.
Right.
There's new evidence. Well, he doesn't specify what the evidence
right.
is.
Right. Is he claiming now to be some kind of biologist, paleontologist, geologist, whatever those ologists are to come up with evolution? I think they're ideologists. Which means that anybody, let me just make this as clear as possible, anybody who believes in evolution as presented by either Darwin or any of his variations, which says that a turtle can become a bird and a monkey can become a man and a fish can walk on the water and something that used to walk on the land can then become a whale, is an idiot. But he's also a blasphemous atheist idiot. It's the worst possible of all situations. There is no way a person with anywhere near adequate intelligence who has looked at the issue and has goodwill can come to any acceptance of any degree of trans-species evolution. By that I mean that one animal becomes another. We certainly can believe that horses used to be smaller, We certainly can believe that alligators used to have a different shape. We certainly can believe that the dolphin that existed a couple of thousand years ago doesn't have to look like a dolphin today. That's no problem. But a dolphin is still a dolphin. A pig is still a pig. A bird is still a bird. No snake ever crawled up a tree, sprouted feathers, and flew away. That's nonsense. But another point, which I thought was very interesting, according to the statement you read, there was a quote, "It is now more than a hypothesis."
Mm-hmm.
Notice the evasive, cowardly way of stating this. What is a hypothesis? A hypothesis is a statement which has yet to be tested to be accepted as true or false. In other words, it is still waiting validation. Okay? It is a hypothesis that the Yankees will win the World Series. Within the next week, this will absolutely be proven as true or as false. But the point is, once something is more than a hypothesis, it has to be a fact. Why? If he's saying it is more than a hypothesis, then he has to say it is a fact, true, you better believe it. But in the same cowardly fashion that everybody who accepts evolution say, they say, well, it's more than a hypothesis, but not quite yet true. It's evolving. That's like saying 2 plus 2 today equals 3, tomorrow equals 3.7, 3.9. Pretty soon it'll evolve into 4. You think this is absolute, complete nonsense. This is garbage. This is an outrage. This is anti-God. This is anti-truth. This is anti the Catholic Church. This is anti-everything that goodness is.
What has been the traditional teaching of the Catholic Church with regard to the story of creation as we know it in Genesis and with regard to its acceptance or denial of Darwin's theory of evolution?
Very briefly, it comes down to this. All human beings are descendants from two original human beings, and of course, one, Eve, was actually descended from Adam. God created man and woman in his image, separate from all other creation. Absolutely separate from all other creation. It was a specific act of creation. And that the concept that man somehow evolved from a previous creature is absolutely, completely anti-Catholic, anti-biblical, anti-truth. Now, in essence, the story in Genesis says basically something like this. That God, one day God created this, and one other day God created that. And the point is, Catholics are not required, and anybody with a brain is never will, take everything in the Bible literally. But you must, unless it violates truth of another type, accept it as true. So therefore, when the Bible says, or the Bible records, that God created a certain category of creatures or a certain category of creation on day 5, that means that that day, whatever that day means, was when that creation took place. But I'll be very careful. What that means is that the word day more properly describes that time period than anything else.
Yeah, what I want to bring up there is our fundamentalist friends, when we say day in the Bible, that refers to a 24-hour period to them. Now, when Catholics look at the story of Genesis and it says a day, do we think of that as simply a time period, or does that actually represent what it represents today? A 24-hour period.
We have to think of it as a time period, but
some people have said that, you know, well, when he said day, they may have been talking about a million years.
No, impossible.
Okay.
Impossible. See, the point is this. Just to, right now we're coming up on, what is it, Eastern Standard Time as opposed to Daylight Savings Time?
Right.
And that day is going to have 25 hours, and that other day in the spring is going to have 23 hours. So are they really days? Well, we sort of say, you know what we mean. And exactly the point. You know what we mean. We're not going to get upset over minor quibbling. But the point is, if it had taken a week for God to do this creation, then the Bible would have said a week. If it had taken 1,000 years, the Bible would have said 1,000 years. If it had taken millions of years, the Bible would have said millions of years. So therefore, although it may not have been precisely 24-hour actual minutes, you know, 24 hours of 60 minutes each or 60 seconds, etc., it means that day, that approximate time period is the best way to describe the way the creation occurred, which means that the Earth is approximately 6,000-7,000 years old, no older.
How do you take that fact from the Bible, what we've been taught, what we've been led to believe from Genesis, and make it jive with the so-called carbon dating techniques that have this planet going back millions of years?
This relies, this goes to the heart of what science is. You and I are talking over a telephone right now, Pat, and
right.
You know that when your voice goes over that microphone, because of electronic radio waves, it can be heard by people in the area and another country in a couple of counties and whatever states you guys cover. The point is this. That is science in reality because it works every time. My voice is being heard. When your announcer gets on, his voice is being heard. When a politician gets on pushing one candidate to the other, his voice is being heard. This is why. Because it has been repeated. Key point. Science is that which can be repeated. That's the absolute essence of science. Everything else which cannot be repeated is not science, but hypothesis theory or crackpot lunacy. Therefore, in order to carbon date a bone and say this bone is 14 million years old, the only way that can be scientifically validated is to kill an animal, put the bone aside, come back 14 million years from now, validate it and check it and say, at least the first time the experiment worked. Then you'd have to kill another animal for another 14 million years, do it about 5 or 6,000 times with no variation, and now you're into the realm of theory, not hypothesis, but theory that is now being validated in experimental fashion. So the point is, since nobody has repeated carbon dating itself is what, 50 years old? This may be shown by some future technological advance to be absolute idiocy. One of the points that occurred in the mid-60s was that in astronomy, they measure things by what are called fixed stars. Fixed stars are stars that are actually moving at vast high rates of speed, but they are so far away they're considered fixed, a very interesting assumption. That which is moving is now fixed. But the point is, they made a miscalculation, and what they said was every estimate we have of large distances in the universe has to be doubled. We made a mistake. But before that mid-60s correction, quote-unquote, there were, quote-unquote, scientists saying, well, the distance from here to Cassiopeia is exactly this distance. It wasn't. They had it completely wrong.
So you're saying carbon dating has been proven?
Of course
not. Exact science. Vin, can we pause on that note? I need to get the news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with more from our guest, Vin Lewis. We're talking about the brouhaha created by the Pope's alleged statement where, supposedly, according to press accounts, he accepts evolution, and it's creating quite a furor, among Catholics and Christians alike. If you have a call, a comment, a question, something you'd like to share with Vin today, feel free to get involved. 835-1330. Paul, take it away. Folks, again, we're joined by Vin Lewis, professional Catholic apologist. We're trying to make sense out of this story that actually broke on Paul Harvey's program yesterday. Apparently, according to press accounts, the Pope, John Paul II, head of the Catholic Church, here on the planet Earth, released a statement that he accepts evolution and it's created quite a furor. With that said, Vin, welcome back. We've got a couple of calls here. Do you want to make another point before we go to the phones, though?
Just one quick
one.
The point is this. One might not consider this a religious subject, and it is because it is for a Catholic. It isn't for anybody else. The reason is this. Catholicism is not, like every other religion in the world, something that someone puts on and takes off like a winter coat and a summer coat. No, it's an absolute way of life. And the Catholic is committed to truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth wherever he finds it. In the fields of science, in the criminal justice system, in sports, you name it. In child rearing, in auto mechanics, in teaching chemistry, in library science, the Catholic is committed to truth wherever it is. So every time there's an issue of truth versus non-truth, it is a Catholic religious issue.
Vin, let me ask you this question
here.
Am I, as a Catholic, bound by my faith, to believe the creation story that God took 6 days to create the earth, that on the seventh day he rested, and that the earth is approximately 6,000 years old? Am I bound to believe that the way I am bound to believe some of the other tenets of the church?
With one qualification. We understand the word rest, of course, is a symbolic thing. God doesn't rest, okay? But, yes, you are bound as a Catholic to believe that because it is in the Bible, because it is presented as history, And there is absolutely no reason whatsoever, I'll repeat that, absolutely no reason whatsoever to go against the clear teachings of the Bible in this case. What the Bible teaches is clear. You may only reject if the Bible is, number one, being clearly figurative, here it is not, or number two, if you have a situation where it goes against church teaching. St. Augustine dealt with this issue. This is not an early issue. He dealt with that back in the 400s, and I forget the book, it was City of God or Confessions. He dealt with this whole concept of taking Genesis literally, and he dealt with it very intelligently and explained how it could not be taken otherwise.
Let's go to a couple of the phone calls here. 835-1330. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air with Vin Lewis. Go ahead. We missed your first start of the statement there. What'd you say?
I want to commend the priest.
So do I, but I'm not one.
Okay, this is not a priest. This is a lay person.
Okay, out for standing up and saying what is true. If you believe what's in the Bible on creation, there has never been a case throughout history up until this time that any species has produced anything other than its own kind. All mankind is based on that fact that when husband and wife have a child, that child will be a child.
Caller, what do you say to people who believe in the theory of evolution? One of the things they like to point out is the different stages of development that a fetus goes through, and in the very early stages, how it might resemble some other animals that we know, whether it be a fish or a pig, etc.
I believe in the theory of adaption. Adaption being the fact that each species will adapt to its surroundings and to its environment. That it can, but it still will only reproduce its own kind.
Let me comment on your statement. Let's assume that what they're saying is correct. Here is a possible explanation. Simply the biblical principle that man is supreme in creation, and therefore he is the end product after everything else was created. Not as a matter of evolution by any means, but as a matter of a symbolic representation that we are the end of creation and not other animals.
Are they confusing stages of development with evolution?
I don't think, again, Pat, I could be wrong. I've never heard an evolution argue that this is anything more than an odd situation. I've never heard an evolutionist argue that this is any kind of proof for evolution. Perhaps you have.
Caller.
But I think even they are so stupid, to argue that this would have anything at all to do with evolution, with even their looniest theory of evolution.
Caller, let me ask you a question here. Is your acceptance of the creation story, as it's literally interpreted, is that in any way tied to your salvation?
Yes, that's faith. If I cannot believe what God said in the beginning, then that puts the question in whether I'm going to believe what's the rest of the Bible. I will make a statement that mankind is the only being on earth that knows it's going to die. There is not another species known that will realize this thought that it will die someday. And that's the difference between animals and human beings.
I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ben, you want to comment on that?
Just that I really don't know if that's true, although it's a very interesting thing to speculate on. But I think his original statement was very correct, or a very good statement. He dealt with the concept of reproduction. Again, a lizard mates with another lizard, and they may produce an albino or a variation of a lizard, and that mutation may breed. But a lizard never produces a bird. A snake never produces a pig. The whole point of what a thing, what a creature reproduces is exactly what it is. And the way he put it was exactly correct. Humans reproduce humans. Monkeys don't produce humans ever.
All right, back to the phones we go. Good afternoon. You're on Flagship with Vin Lewis.
Hello.
Hi.
I spoke with a prelate of a Catholic church one time to get a definitive thing on Genesis.
All right.
And they spoke, and they said that there was room in Genesis, as the church itself officially interpreted, for both scientific interpretation and creationism. And all that the Pope has done is come down more on the side of science and because the church has always had a position that it did, and this is right from Monsignor, that it did not disagree with science, that it was in conformity, but it wasn't to go against God. The science agreed with God in the sense that God, it's a story.
And now, when you say story, are we talking factual or just a creation story?
The essential part of Genesis is that God created out of nothing, and that that God could, according to the one side of the possible interpretation, God can work in long stretches of time in his own way. That doesn't mean we don't have a soul, which, I mean, the Pope seems to have put down.
Are you a Catholic?
I've gone to Catholic schools.
No, that's not what I asked. Are you a Catholic?
No.
No, okay, because I'm just under, I'm curious as to what.
But
your understanding is, did you believe the Catholics believed that there was actually a real Adam and a real Eve and that they were the first man and woman and that God created them?
Well, that's why I called the church. That's why I called to find out.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know what they thought. So, because I'm not being a Catholic, I can't speak for what, as a Catholic, I would think. But I wanted to ask an official source what the official church.
Why did you feel this prelate was the official source?
Because from what I understand of the church, the Pope and all of the bishops tend to have some kind of concurrence on doctrine and interpretation in most cases.
Vin, your thoughts?
A couple of things. Number one, she's perfectly right in what she began. There is no conflict between science and the Bible. Then she's perfectly wrong. Once again, and I wish you had listened to the early part of the show, this is not science. This is not science. This is not science.
I know.
Science is repetitive. Until you can see a frog sprout wings and fly from a tree, evolution is nothing but a theory, not even a scientific theory. Because a scientific theory has to propose the parameters in which it can be tested. This is not science. You've used the wrong word. I'll say it again. This is not science. There is never, ever, ever a conflict between science, truth, Catholicism, faith. Conflict. But the point, I'm sorry, I just have to get my point out.
Oh, no, I know.
I go to hell. The point is, you made an excellent point. You believe that bishops and popes tend, in most cases, to have a certain congruence in faith. Yes, they do. Sometimes, maybe, suppose. The point is, you did not talk to a real Catholic. I don't care what says on his Social Security card or in his 1040 form. Any man who says that evolution is possible, any man that says that a Catholic can believe in evolution as it is presented, that frogs become birds, that snakes become horses, that bears become dolphins. Any man who says that is not a Catholic, because he is a liar about the nature of God.
I take it you're in disagreement with what the Pope has just put before.
No.
Hold on, Ben. If in fact what we're having reported here is accurate.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
The Pope is in disagreement with God. Let's get it as clear as this is like saying, well, the Pope says 2 and 2 equals 7 and all Catholics have to do that, and well, my opinion is different. No, that is not my opinion. This is a fact. This is an utter lie. This is a blasphemy being offered as I don't know what. It's truly incomprehensible by any intelligent fashion whatsoever, except as an exercise of pure reason.
Caller and Vin, I got to get a quick commercial break in. We'll be back with more of your calls at 835-1330.
Talk radio. Here is Rockin' Talkin' Robot, Pat Kemble.
All right, we're back with Vin Lewis. Phone lines are packed here. We will make sure that we get all of your calls in. Vin's going to stick around until after 4 until we get this whole thing sorted out. Those of you just tuning in, we're talking about the supposed statement made by the Pope yesterday that's been bandied about in the press, on TV, and in print, that the Pope supposedly, and I say supposedly because we haven't seen the actual document, has accepted Darwin's theory of evolution, that he supposedly thinks that it's more than just a hypothesis according to some new knowledge, which he didn't elaborate on. And this has created a tremendous furor among Catholics, among Christian fundamentalists, as well as it should. We've also got Vin Lewis here today, a professional Catholic apologist, to try to shed some light on what's going on. And Vin, let's get right back to the phone lines here. Good afternoon. You're on Flying Ship.
Good afternoon. As prior to what one caller previously said about man knowing he's going to die, he doesn't know when, even if he's going to take his own life, he doesn't know he's going to die because he could botch the job. But as far as the animals not knowing that they're going to die, why is it they have such a real strong feeling of survival?
Vin?
Well, I think that's simply in the nature of any living being is to sustain its life unless it sees a valid reason to give up its life.
Right.
I think that's simply the nature of God, the nature of every animating force, which we call a soul in every living thing, is simply to survive.
Yeah, but the man said that the animal doesn't know that it is going to die.
That's what he said. I think it's a very interesting speculative position. I simply don't know if what he's saying is true or not, but it's, and I don't know how you could validate it either way. It's something. It'd be a nice, interesting thing to talk about into the wee hours of the morning.
Right, that's true. But, you know, he can't know that because of the strong feeling. Even a mouse tries to get away, you know, keep them getting caught by
right, but that's not what he said. He said, you see, a mouse might be running away simply because it recognizes danger either instinctively or from what it's learned experience. What he said is that animals don't know they're going to die. I don't know how we could prove that, but we have to be careful even if we're attacking them on what we're attacking them.
Caller, let me ask you a question here. Are you a Catholic?
Yes.
What do you make of the Pope's statement?
Does it
create confusion in your mind?
No, it didn't, because I didn't really put much stock in it. I didn't hear the whole thing. You know, just what has been said over the news, just being mentioned about it. And I figured, due to Pope's respect, I'd like to at least read what he did say.
Caller, let me ask you this. Were you raised to believe in the creation story as we know it in Genesis?
Yes.
That the world was created in 6 days? On the seventh day, God rested, and that the world's approximately 6,000 years old. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Do you think it's important to believe that to be a Catholic?
Well, not really important to believe, you know, strongly to believe that that's the way it happened, because we can't know for sure. Who knows what did happen that many years ago? You know, Christ could have been black as far as, you know, anybody really knows. It's only been what's been handed down through history.
Paula, let me ask you this. If science were able to prove tomorrow that the Earth is really 15 million years old, would that shake your faith at all?
No, because I couldn't tell. I'm only 69 years old. I know it's that old.
All right. Thanks, caller.
All right, bye.
Appreciate it. Let's move along here. Good afternoon. You're on Flying Ship with Vin Lewis.
Hello. I'm calling in response to the caller, a couple of calls back.
All right.
In the Adam and Eve question.
Yes.
I had made a lot of phone calls around the Erie area to local Catholic churches, and not one of them had a real answer. Some of them
about
had,
this story?
Huh?
About this story?
No, about Adam and Eve, whether they were real.
Oh,
some said you'd have to get back, you might have to find out.
Let me give her the answer. Adam and Eve were two real living human beings created as full, absolute human beings. We would have recognized them as human beings. They were created male and female. They were perfect. So they probably looked a lot better than we did, spoke better, and didn't have the defects. They didn't get tooth decay. But they were as real as President Clinton, as George Bush, as you, as I, as John Paul II.
And they were the first man, first woman, correct?
Absolutely, without qualification. There's your answer. If those other people don't give you the answer, I can only say I'm ashamed that they call themselves Catholic, but they aren't, because they're denying an absolute truth of the faith. Here's your official answer. Take it to the grave. Adam and Eve were two real, living, breathing human beings.
Okay.
Perfect in every way.
If there's any Catholics out there, make that phone call tomorrow. We'll make that phone call Monday or Sunday or whatever.
All you'll do is get disappointed. No, you see, that's the point. You're perfectly right. But understand that those people who call themselves Catholics aren't. Understand that the vast majority of these people or call themselves Catholics because they're trying to impress their grandmothers so their grandmothers will remember them in their wills. So they go through the motions of being a Catholic, but they aren't Catholic any more than I'm trying to think of a non-political group I could use.
How about Ted Kennedy?
Any more than Ted Kennedy is a decent human being.
All I can say is you will recognize the true religion by their fruits. So.
You're absolutely right, and that's not part of the true religion. Did you hear me or not? Those people are not Catholic.
If they're in their churches.
Excuse me, you could go into a Catholic church. Would that make you a priest? Answer my question.
Say that again.
What?
Say it again.
If you went into a Catholic church, would that make you a priest?
No, but the
if you went into a hospital, would that make you a doctor?
No.
Well, then therefore, you are talking about fraud. Understand? You are a fraud. Let me wait.
Did you hear that, Erie, then? Okay,
I beg your pardon?
What, then?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, did you hear that, Erie? I mean, you're calling them all frauds.
No, I'm not calling them all frauds. I'm assuming that you spoke to people on the other end of the phone who answered phones at alleged Catholic churches.
Nope.
Assuming that they gave you the answers they gave you, they are not Catholic.
On the phone.
No, listen to me. I'm not accusing you of being wrong. I'm simply qualifying my answer so you understand it. It's an unqualified answer based on your presumption, based on what you're saying to be correct. If those people gave those answers that you said, you didn't misunderstand them. If they gave those answers, they are not Catholic. Got it? They are not Catholic.
I have it.
Thank okay.
You.
I thank
Bye-bye.
You for the call. We appreciate it. Moving right along. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Ben Lewis.
Hi. If you'll forgive me, I missed the first half hour of the
I can't program, forgive you. I'm not a priest.
I just wondered, what are Ben's qualifications?
Great question. Ben, what makes you a Catholic apologist?
Well, I never go bother the academic qualifications because I think that is something that we avoid. I claim the status of prophet, literally. And therefore, what I use is exactly what Elijah uses. The fact that I never, ever fail to give an answer for what I believe. The fact that I have never, ever failed in over 2,000 confrontations to give a Bible verse for every single thing the Catholic Church teaches. The fact that whenever I am attacked, the person who attacked me always self-destructs. That is scientific validity, theological validity, absolute validity based on prediction in advance that is always fulfilled of my qualifications. And the last thing I always bring up is just listen to your heart and you know I'm telling the truth.
Caller, let me ask you a question here. Who would you feel is qualified to speak for the Catholic Church on this issue other than the Pope?
Any of the bishops.
It would have to be a bishop?
They are the teaching arm of the church.
Okay.
And the bishop is responsible.
No other Catholics would know.
Well,
that would include teachers and seminaries, correct?
No, I wouldn't say that, but you asked who would be the authority that could speak for the church.
So you accept only what bishops say?
No, I also accept what,
as far as religion goes, as far as Catholicism.
Pretty much, yeah, that's true.
Ben, is there a problem?
There's a tremendous problem with that. This lady, if she knows her history, knows that at the time of Henry VIII, when he broke with the church and established Protestantism in England, every single Catholic ordained installed bishop from the Pope, every single one but the martyr, St. John Fisher, went along. Up until that day, if this lady were saying, I would follow my bishop, she would have been damned into hell after she followed her bishop out of the Church of Rome into apostasy. The point is, a bishop, like every other human being, has a free will. He can choose to reject God. He can choose to go into heresy. He can choose to go into apostasy. There's absolutely no guarantee to keep him straight any more than there is for anybody else.
Hold on, both of you. Hold on. Caller, do you feel that lay Catholics are not qualified to speak about their faith?
No.
Okay, let me do this. I got to put both of you on hold. Can you hold with me, caller? I'm going to put you on hold. Vin on hold. We've got to get the news in, commercial break, back with more. Get all your calls in here at 835-1330.
The Right Way with Pat Campbell.
Okay, folks, we're finally back. We've got Ben Lewis, a professional Catholic apologist, is joining us today to shed some light to help us, make sense out of this story.
Vin Lewis here again. You may have noticed a change in the tone of Pat's voice. What happened was that the tape broke, and that was the only copy I had of the show. So what I did was I removed the tape and tried to repair it mechanically, and unfortunately, a very small part of it was lost. We'll pick it up again and I will attempt to replace by memory what the substance of what actually was lost. So here we go, picking it up again, and you'll understand why the quality of the tape and the quality of the reproduction is not the greatest for a little bit.
The Pope, and again, I want to say allegedly, has accepted evolution, Darwin's theory of evolution. This would seem to conflict with 2,000 years of Christianity and traditional Judeo-Christian beliefs, specifically dealing with the book of Genesis and the creation story, that the earth was created in 7 days, actually 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested, and that the earth is approximately 6,000 years old. Vin's trying to shed some light on it. We're entertaining your calls, comments, and questions as well at 835-1330. We did hold a patient lady caller through the break, and we want to get back to her. Her and Vin were going back and forth, and Mammy's still with us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. You were questioning Vin's credentials to speak on this issue, correct?
Right.
All right.
Whether he actually had, you know, whether...
I think the break here in the program is due both to the mechanical break in the tape and also to the fact that we reached the end of the master tape and Pat's engineer had to flip the tape over. So, again, a little bit was lost. We're essentially dealing with a defense by me of my own status as Catholic apologist to the questioning of the lady caller. And the part you missed is when I gave her a psychic reading. I was able to, by getting an aura of her through the phone, determine that she was a Sagittarian, that she was thinking of becoming a vegetarian, and had recently vacationed in Mexico, and that her favorite color was light green, and her favorite flower was a daisy. Once I told her this, she was thoroughly convinced that I was, in fact, a prophet of God, and accepted, without a doubt, my qualifications. She then went on to point out that even though I'm a prophet of God, there is a difference between what a prophet presents as truth and what a prophet presents as personal opinion, and that's where we shall pick it up again.
Please.
His personal opinion, which he is entitled to,
right,
or whether he had any qualifications in order to speak on behalf of, the church.
Ma'am, let me ask you a question. Are you a Catholic yourself?
I am.
What were you raised to believe?
I was when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were taught that the scripture stories of Adam and Eve.
Okay. Did you believe the literal translation? Did you believe literally that the earth was created in 6 days, days as we know them?
When I was young, I did. Yeah.
Okay, but now that you're older, you don't.
And since then, I've learned that scripture in the book in scripture
mm-hmm.
in the Bible, there's different genres. Of literary genres.
All right.
And some of our leading scripture scholars, such as Father Raymond Brown, who is one of the most, there were not two people called Adam and Eve that populated the entire earth. If that happened, it would not matter one iota to the truth of the Bible, because the truth is that God created. Whether he created two people and did it that way, or whether he chose to create 2,000 people or 2 billion people, that doesn't matter.
Okay, Vin, your thoughts.
Yeah, the interesting point is to create, quote, a famous scholar. How does a man get to be a scholar? He gets with a bunch of other people who've never done a lick of honest day's work in their life, who spend none of their time feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, who spend none of their time testifying to the faith on street corners, spend none of their time outside abortion clinics when it's 12 degrees below zero, none of their time's taking in the hungry, none of their time taking in the homeless. Instead, they sit around and read books and read books and read books and read more books and go to conferences, get fed good meals, sleep in nice holiday inns, get transferred around in limousines, and we testify to their ability to testify in Christianity. What I tell you is this. That is utter nonsense. Scholarship is a damnable profession. It puts people into hell. And the way one becomes a scholar is by carrying on a spiritual homosexual relationship with the existing establishment. you essentially lick their boots, you review their books, you say they're wonderful, they say you're wonderful, you quote them, they quote you, you learn archaic languages as if the truth of God is not available to you every moment of every day through actual grace. And then you wind up with gobbledygook like this, which says, oh, it doesn't really matter if there were two people. Oh, it doesn't really matter if Jonah were true or not. Let me tell you something. It matters totally, because you're either calling God a liar or you're not. Christ himself spoke about Jonah in the belly of the great fish as a fact.
I will break here and ask you to turn over to the second side where this pedantic, dry, and unemotional presentation by me will continue. That is, if you haven't fallen asleep already.
Their books, you say they're wonderful, they say you're wonderful, you quote them, they quote you, you learn archaic languages as if the truth of God is not available to you every moment of every day through actual grace. And then you wind up with gobbledygook like this, which says, oh, it doesn't really matter if there were two people. Oh, it doesn't really matter if Jonah were true or not. Let me tell you something. It matters totally, because you're either calling God a liar or you're not. Christ himself spoke about Jonah in the belly of the great fish as a fact. If Christ told any truth whatsoever, then you have to believe in it. If he doesn't, then don't pay any more attention to him than you do to Bill Clinton. Because once a man is a liar, especially if a man claims to be God, then you cannot believe that he's God. You cannot believe any of his words.
Well, what about Christ's parables? Were those all factual, too?
No, of course not. But that was the whole point. It is extremely clear when parables were presented and extremely clear when he was presenting history. This is now like saying, well, Christ spoke about David. Well, we really don't know if David existed. I saw a show on Arts and Entertainment where they were talking about whether David, King David, actually existed or not, because there's no historical evidence for him. Well, let me tell you the historical evidence for him. The historical evidence is, number one, Christ is referred to as Son of David, not a non-existent personality. And number two, Christ talks about him as an actual existing person. That's all the evidence any righteous person ever needs is the word of God.
All right, let me ask the caller something here. Caller, you still with me? Do you believe that, and again, if the Pope did say this yesterday, do you believe that the theory of evolution as taught by Charles Darwin is compatible with Christianity, with Catholicism?
I believe it could be. I personally do not believe in evolution. I think if you want to believe the theory of evolution, that's more of a leap of faith than to believe creation. But as long as you believe that God infused a soul into the human being that is made in his image and likeness, then, you know, that's fine. That does not conflict with Catholicism.
All right, caller, anything else?
No, thanks.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Vin, something I want you to clarify here, and a lot of my non-Catholic friends, even some here at the station, have a real problem with this. They are under the impression, and I think this is part of the reason this has created such a furor out there, non-Catholics are under the impression that we as Catholics have to accept anything that the Pope says as gospel truth. For example, they feel that this doctrine, I don't know if it's just a misunderstanding on their part or if we as Catholics have not properly conveyed the concept, but the doctrine of infallibility. You see, I tried to explain to a friend yesterday that if the Pope comes out tomorrow and says that the moon is made out of cheese, I don't have to believe that. The only time we have to accept it is when he speaks infallibly on matters of faith and morals. Can you speak to that? And give us some examples of when the Pope has spoken infallibly and how we know he's speaking infallibly.
Very briefly, when the Pope speaks infallibly, he is nothing but a rubber stamp or a photocopy machine of something that has been believed all the time. In other words, all he's doing is validating something that exists already.
Reaffirming.
Yes. Okay. Reaffirming, right, exactly. Repeating, which means, is there ever a necessity for a pope to speak infallibly? No, there never has been, there never will be. Very simply, I can tell you that O.J. Simpson was acquitted of the murder charges. He was. I am infallible when I say that, because all I'm doing is repeating a fact. Now, I could tell you that I, in my heart, believe he was guilty. Mm-hmm. So what? You don't have to accept that. That's my opinion.
You may honestly believe he's innocent, but you must accept the fact that he was legally acquitted. There's a difference here.
Let me give some examples to the listeners, too, of what I recognize to be instances where the Pope or a Pope has spoken infallibly in recent history. Probably the best example, I think, in the mid to late 50s, the Catholic belief, the Feast of the Assumption. Catholics believe differently than some of their Christian brothers and sisters that Mary was taken body and soul, assumed into heaven. Now, that was declared by a pope. Was he speaking infallibly at that time?
Yes.
Okay. Another example would be Humanae Vitae, which came out in the late 60s, which is basically the papal encyclical, papal letter that prohibits Catholics from using artificial birth control. At that time, was Pope John Paul VI speaking infallibly?
I'm sorry, it was Paul VI. Okay.
What did I say?
John Paul VI.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul VI. I'm sorry. Yeah.
In my opinion, yes, but the key thing to this is it's completely irrelevant whether he was or not, because all he was doing was once again repeating an eternal.
How do we know? How do we know when a pope is speaking infallibly? Does he come to the balcony and say, "Stop the presses, I'm speaking infallibly"?
Sometimes.
All right. Sometimes. Is it in print, too?
Sometimes.
All right.
Now, the point is, why the pope, a pope, does not always say, "By the way, I'm going to list the following 17 things infallible just to stop discussion and to make sure everybody's got it straight," such as, guardian angel. I don't know why a pope doesn't do that. I think it might have more to do with internal politics in the Vatican than it does with anything else, and styles of leadership. But the point is this. The fact that a pope declares something infallible on Monday means absolutely nothing, because all real Catholics believed it on the Sunday before that Monday, 200 years before, 1,000 years, 1,500 years before. They believed it back with the apostles. The assumption was a thing taught by the apostles who witnessed the evidence of it. They passed it on orally and in writing, and so therefore was carried on all the time. And why the pope declared it infallible in the 1950s, I don't know, and it didn't make a bit of difference.
You say that, and I'm going to use the assumption as an example, that the apostles, the original apostles, have passed that story on orally and in writing. Where in Scripture does it tell us that Mary was assumed into heaven, body and soul?
If you're looking for that sentence, it's not there.
All right.
If you're looking for evidence for it by other statements, it clearly is there.
Okay, Vin, let's pause on that note. Need to get a quick commercial break in. Callers online, hang in there. We'll get to everybody. 835-1330. Cellular One users, *1330. That call is free. I'd like to fax us here, 835-8395. We're talking with a professional Catholic apologist, Mr. Vin Lewis, and we're discussing the furor, the brouhaha, over the recent statement allegedly made by the Pope that he accepts evolution and also claims that there is new evidence, new knowledge that leads us to recognize that the theory of evolution is more than just a mere hypothesis. Back with more after this. Technically there. We're going to go right back to the phones, then we'll get that commercial break in. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air with Vin Lewis.
Let me make one comment, if I may, Pat.
Sure, go ahead.
When a pope gives his opinion, which this is a case of, no Catholic is obligated to accept it whatsoever.
Okay.
When he reaffirms dogma, every Catholic is obligated, as he was before the action of the pope, as opposed to after. It doesn't change anything. It just makes it, shall we say, in writing. If a man gives his word on a contract, even though he doesn't put it in writing, he will adhere to the contract. It's the same thing. If the pope validates something which we already believe, it changes nothing. But if he gives his opinion, and we must be clear that this is his personal opinion, then we are to accept it or reject it on the same basis that we would accept any other personal opinion.
Okay, caller, go ahead.
From what I understand, the Pope said that evolution is the way to go.
Here's the story. Hold on.
That's a play on words.
Here's the story. This is the quote here. Supposedly in a message to the Pontifical Academy of Science, the Pope wrote this week, "Today, new knowledge leads to recognition of the theory of evolution as more than a hypothesis." That's the exact quote.
Okay, now what about the second law of thermodynamics?
Which is?
No, I don't have it quoted in front of me, but this is from what I understand. You might want to check on it. What it says is that as things age, they do not get better.
They
end up breaking down. They deteriorate.
Exactly. Utterly
okay.
Correct.
And another thing on this evolution theory, in the Bible, 2 Timothy 3:16, it says, all scripture is God-breathed and useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. Now, if the Pope is going totally against what the Bible says, there's something's not right there.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
I mean, God said it right there in his Bible. He said, hey, listen, this is the truth. This is what I give you. What was said in the Bible is history.
That's not what that statement says, but the Bible does contain factual history, of course. And what you're saying is, I'll summarize it, and then I'll agree with it.
Okay.
Is that evolution cannot be reconciled with the Bible. You're utterly correct, so therefore evolution has to be thrown out as wrong. Utterly correct. So therefore this papal statement, if it is true, and if we have the correct translation, is in fact in error. If you listened to the earlier part of the show, you would have heard me denounce that repeatedly.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I'm not defending the papal statement. I'm criticizing it and damning it.
And caller, you also have to understand the Pope is not speaking infallibly here. Catholics are not bound to believe what he is saying. Do you understand that?
Well, see, I don't know. Now, Steve...
Now, do you understand what I'm saying, though? He is not
yeah.
speaking infallibly. I, as a Catholic, am not bound to follow or believe what he's teaching.
Well, I would really question what's going on in Rome, then, if those are the statements that he's making. I mean, what does the Pope believe?
If, in fact, those statements have been made by the Pope, you're absolutely right. It is cause for grave concern for Catholics everywhere.
Yes, it is, definitely. I guess that's all I really have to say. I've been brought up to believe that what's written in the Bible is true in fact based on 2 Timothy 3:16 and other passages in the Bible that I can't recall the memory right now.
Doesn't matter.
And don't have the time to look up. But there is something seriously wrong in Rome if the Pope is
correct.
Telling everyone that evolution is the way to go. Especially
he didn't
when
quite say that. But the mere fact that you could draw that conclusion makes this statement scandalous that someone could draw that conclusion from it.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we're all in agreement today.
Okay. Well,
thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Vin, quick commercial break. Back with more right after this.
DC News at the top of the hour. Local news at the bottom. Craig Bowe.
Welcome back. Again, we're back with our guest, Vin Lewis, Catholic apologist. We're talking about the evolution brouhaha that's been going on in the mainstream media here. Statements allegedly attributed to the Pope, which seem to conflict, if you would, with traditional Christian teachings. Vin, a quick note before we go back to the phones here. I got a fax last week from a listener. Wanted to know if you were on the Sally, Jesse, Raphael show. They claimed they saw you on one. I don't know if it was a new one or a rerun or what.
I've been on that show three times.
Three times. What have they had you on for?
One time was surrogate motherhood, which I called nothing but prostitution.
All right.
Another time was guys who couldn't decide whether they were homosexual or not, and therefore were literally interfering with their destroying their wives' lives.
All right.
And the third time I was on was dealing with the issue of married priests and that woman who claimed to have borne a child from an Irish bishop.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines here. Good afternoon. You're on Flagship with Vin Lewis.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Since I talked to you, Vin, I resigned. The last time you were on Pat's show, I sent my resignation into the Catholic Church due to their teachings. They're just completely out of whack with what's in the Bible. I mean, right down the line, when's the last time the Pope even uttered God's name? Have you ever even heard him pay tribute to God's name at all? Have you ever even heard him say it at a mass?
If you get to
a priest has even said God's name?
If you get to a serious question, fine. Otherwise, I think we should go on to another question.
No, I'm serious. Have you ever heard the Pope use God's name?
Pat, I'm not going to deal with nonsense.
All
right, let me put it a different way. Pat, I'm not going to deal with a jerk. Get him off, get another guy on.
Vin, I tell you what, let's wrap this up now. Because I got to go to the news here at
sure.
the bottom of the hour. We got to move along. That, by the way, in case you didn't know, was Jehovah's Witness.
No, they all seem the same to me.
They all seem the same too.
But let me give that. Let me give my telephone number so that guy can call me up.
That's what I want to do. We want to give out your phone number. Tell them about your monthly textbook and installments, armament, and also your new political newsletter.
Right. People can contact me at area code 914-226-4172. The organization I run, ARM, which is the largest Catholic apologetic and evangelistic organization in America, maybe in the world, is headquartered at 55 Halen, that's P as in Papal, A-L-E-N Road, number 38, Hope Well Junction, New York, 12533. We have two publications. One is The Armament, which is a textbook of in installments on apologetics and evangelism, and a new one, The Non-Republic, which is Catholic views on politics and political issues. Get in touch with me. I'll tell you about either. Again, 914-226-4172. I'll accept phone calls up until about 10 o'clock at night.
Ben, as always, a pleasure to have you on the program. Look forward to bringing you back, sir.
Thank you, Pat. God
Thank
bless,
you.
And may your ratings increase.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Ben Lewis, we're off to the newsroom with Paul Manning.
Actually, we're not off to any newsroom at all. What we have is a situation that I have a significant amount of space left on this tape, and I can do one of a couple of things. One is I can simply stall, or I could leave it blank, or I could add something which I believe may be useful to you, particularly in dealing with the subjects that were dealt with on Pat's show. So, let me try this last alternative. Let me try to draw a distinction between various different degrees of statements. Let me draw a distinction, if I may, on what I mean by hypothesis, thesis, theory, law, etc., in terms of science. An hypothesis is a statement which has yet to be proven and is, at this stage at which is presented, purely imaginary. So in other words, it is an intellectual construct. A thesis is one which has a more narrow limitation. In other words, a thesis would be something more specific, and something which has, in theory, a way to verify or refute it. A theory would be a statement not yet proven true nor false, which has within it the standards by which it may be judged. And a law would be a scientific principle which outlines and specifies cause and effect relationships. I'm not exactly sure how clear this is, so I'll try to go over it again in the process, give illustrations. As I speak now, I recently read an article that a supporter sent to me dealing with the apparent coming anarchy, which will take place in Africa and various parts of Asia. The author argues that certain forces, such as racial identity, religious affiliation, tribal identity, economics, drugs, even rising water levels, will cause essentially a destruction of the mental framework that we in the Western world have as to what countries are on what maps and what boundaries mean. I would say this is a hypothesis, mainly because it is presenting a whole bunch of things, none of which are guaranteed to come true, none of which can be quantified in any real sense. How much of a rising water level is significant? How much racial identity really takes place among the black citizens of Africa? How much tribal identity? These things are almost impossible to measure. However, does not mean to say that the guy writing the article didn't present something of value or something of use. He simply set up a situation in which it is literally impossible to determine how much of what he says is specifically true. After all, the anarchy may take place simply because of individual strongmen, individual leaders, individual dictators bringing it about, or because they fall and are assassinated, causing it by their lack of being about and controlling things. It was the fall of communism and Tito in Yugoslavia which caused the current problem in the Balkans, in a certain sense. In another sense, it was centuries-old disagreements and disputes between different groups. In another sense, it is the recent wave, or shall we say the last part of the wave of nationalism which swept Western Europe in the 20th century. How many of these things caused the problems? I don't know. And it's really difficult, if not impossible, to determine. That's what I mean by a hypothesis. Again, hypothetical, impossible to prove. A thesis is something which is possible to prove once the technology has advanced to the point, or once the degree of knowledge has advanced to the point that things can be done. I'll give an example from the field of sociology. In the field of, I guess the proper word is conditioned response or conditioned behavior, a fellow by the name of Milligan, I believe that was his name, at Yale University did a response call, did an experiment, social experiment, called obedience to authority. And what he was trying to determine was the degree to which humans, ordinary, everyday, off-the-street type human people, would obey authority without any kind of penalty or compulsion or force. So he dressed people up in lab suits, that is, smocks with clipboards, and put them in an experimental situation where people were requested to inflict pain upon another person, a stranger they had met, in order to determine the relationship between pain and learning. Now, the point is, he had a thesis, in essence, which became a theory once he actually set up the situation by which it could occur. So once again, a hypothetical situation, hypothetical statement for which the situation does not exist and cannot exist in any foreseeable circumstances, is a hypothesis, hypothesis, hypothetical thesis. A thesis is a statement which can be tested as to whether it is true or false as soon as the technology or degree of learning can be advanced to that point. A theory is a statement which contains within it the conditions for success and failure. So in other words, to use an old example, the theory of gravity would be that objects of different weight, if you could remove things such as air resistance, would fall to the ground at the same rate. This was proven when one of the astronauts dropped a feather and a hammer on the moon, and they both reached the ground at the same time. So therefore, the theory of gravitational attraction became the law of gravitational attraction. I don't mean to say that you had to go to the moon to prove this. What I'm simply saying is that when Galileo, or whoever did formulate these things, actually formulated the theory of gravity, he put it in a gravitational attraction, that is, and the theory that objects would fall at an equal rate. He set up a situation in which the theory could be tested. Now, to go back to the concept of science and go back to the concept of the parameters, the limitations, the conditions under which statements can be made, my point was and remains, and I will emphasize it again, is that for something to be a scientific law or a scientific fact, it must be repeatable. It must happen over and over and over and over again under the same circumstances. If the circumstances vary and the situation continues, then you may have a confusion over cause and effect. If the circumstances vary and the situation does not repeat itself, then you probably have a direct determination, a direct discovery, so to speak, between cause and effect. To use a very simple example of a scientific principle, fire consumes that which it burns. If you put a log into a wood-burning stove that already has a fire and leave it alone, you will come back and find ashes. What you will have in the meantime is heat, light. That's what fire gives off. This happens all the time. Now, if the log is very wet, it may not burn, but this is because you have changed the conditions necessary for combustion. But fire is a repeatable, measurable, verifiable, predictable event, a condition, a status. That is science. Evolution, and any such thing as evolution, remains, in the very true sense of the word, only a hypothesis, not even a theory. Because there is no foreseeable way in which one can set up a situation where evolution can take place. In other words, how could you possibly set aside a world for several billion years, put some primitive life forms on it, and come back to see that the life forms are developing into a more and more advanced status? To put it as mildly as possible, this is inconceivable. And that which is inconceivable can remain only a hypothesis. Once again, science is that which is repeatable. Science is that which can be placed into numbers, measured in numbers, quantified in numbers. Science is that which is objective. By objective, I mean that which is impartial regarding who observes it. Whether I want a fire to take place, as I would in a wood-burning stove, or whether I would not, as if it burns down my house, the fire still would take place. And if I were in close proximity of it, whether I wanted it or not, I would feel the heat. I would see the light. That's what I mean by impartial. If every one of the so-called evolutionary scientists, and I say so-called because they aren't, came to the same conclusions about the same quote-unquote fossil evidence, about the same remains that they've studied from Africa or Asia, if they came to the same conclusion with regarding the dates, then you might have something which starts to verge on science, or at least starts meeting one of the conditions, one of the necessary requirements, one of the prerequisites for something to be scientific. But in fact, they don't. The so-called carbon-14 dating, outside of being defective for the reasons that I mentioned before, leads such, or produces such a large range of possible dates as to be nearly practically useless. to use a simple analogy, if one argues that medicine and the practice of medicine has certain scientific aspects to it, and one of them is the concept of body temperature. In other words, if a human body cannot maintain a certain temperature, that is, if it goes below a certain temperature, the body will cease to function, the person will die. And if you hold that the human body, when it exceeds a certain temperature, the human body will cease to function and the person will die, then you have a scientific range under normal circumstances, which is the operating temperature. With few, let me make some arbitrary, but I think approximate numbers here. Let's make those numbers to be, say, 90 to 110 degrees. Under 90, you're in trouble. Above 110, you're in trouble. This is a 20-degree range. If a doctor were to say that there is definitely a proper range in which the human body functions, but this range is somewhere between 30 degrees below zero and 250 degrees above, and we're not exactly sure where it is in there. And if every doctor said this, then for all practical purposes, they have not given us any information that can be useful. They have not quantified anything. Science is produced and referred to in numbers. This does not mean, of course, that science is the only truth, but science, scientific truth, must be measured in numbers. If the numbers are so broad, if the numbers are so excessive, if the numbers are so approximate or loose or non-definite, then we are not in the realm of science, but perhaps in the realm of hypothesis. It is an old theological question of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It is not a scientific question, unless the number could be limited, say between 20 and 30. And every scientist who approached the problem would come up with the same answer. So, to repeat, when you deal with scientific issues, when you are presented with something which claims to be scientific, one of the characteristics is that if it is a scientific theory, it has the ethical obligation of containing within it the means of, or the conditions under which it can be verified as true or false. In other words, it must be able to set up an experimental test so that the presence of X will produce the condition Y when raised to temperature Z. That is science. That can be chemistry or physics. Some biology is science. After that, hardly anything else is. When you listen to people talk about evolution, or psychology, or sociology, or even statistics, as science, or as scientific, remember that these things need to be reproduced objectively, mathematically, over and over, and that there needs to be some type of way of measuring the results, verifying the theories, in order for the thing to actually fall under the category of science. So in other words, science uses the tool of mathematics. Without mathematics, you do not have science. At best, you have a hypothesis or a thesis. Simply as an aside on a related subject, It is my own personal opinion that one of the great disasters of the 20th century has been the application of scientific principles, or the attempted application of scientific principles, to the so-called social sciences. Certainly conclusions can be drawn regarding experiments which can be conducted on people, but to try to reduce the human being, who always functions with free will, who is always subject to temptations and to actual grace, who always has the spirit world around him, both in the form of guardian angels and in the form of demons, to try to quantify this so that one can draw conclusions, mathematical conclusions, with predictability of how people will act in certain circumstances, is utterly nonsensical. It is completely non-scientific and completely idiotic. And, as I say, because of various different reasons, and I could only give a hypothetical argument as to why, the social sciences, after the 60s, or during the 60s, began to imitate the physical sciences out of a sense of envy, and began to reduce their information, their gathered information, and put it on computer printouts, therefore thinking that somehow, because something was measured or processed through a computer and printed on those large, wide pieces of paper with green and white lines or green and white bars running across, that this somehow made something more true. It is unfortunate that this has pretty much severed the necessary link between the social sciences, and by that I mean the things that we call psychology, sociology, etc. Has severed the necessary link between those fields of study and their proper foundations, which are philosophy and theology. The ancient Greeks said that the proper study of man is man. One might argue that this is true if you're talking about a purely academic as opposed to religious position. However, the proper study of man is man as man, not as some minor factor in a massive experiment in which stimulus and response will always yield the same result. It is also unfortunate that, in my opinion, one of the reasons why economics no longer is able to, shall we say, convey the credibility that it used to, if it ever did, is because economics also has become enamored with and has been seduced by the computer, the quantifiable analysis, the explanation by means of seeing man as the Marxist would see him, economic in nature as opposed to social and religious in nature. This is one of the reasons why so many economic policies fail. Another is, of course, that no one really believes they would ever work. But to try to sort of summarize and shall we say, combine what I've said before, one might call many of the economic policies by which a certain tax rate is lowered or raised, by which income redistribution occurs, by which consumption or demand is stimulated, all of these policies are in fact economic theories. And interestingly enough, if you ever read an economics textbook or talk to an economist, one of the terms they will frequently use is all other things remaining the same. Now, the problem with that is nothing else ever does remain the same. So therefore, in a very real sense, economic theories cannot be proven in the scientific way, but they can be validated by the use of right reason and the same basic human principles or application of the same basic human principles which apply to all living human beings. Not that you would find it very interesting, but you might wish to read a famous Austrian economist known as Ludwig von Mises, some whose principles and teachings I have stolen and incorporated into ARM products. We still have a few minutes, and as an extra present, I will give you now a musical interlude of one of the prettiest popular songs ever written called Our Winter Love. We'll finish off the tape with that, because I think it's beyond copyright anyway. Thanks for listening. God bless. The song took a little less time than I thought, so let me just make a quick comment on the difference between art and science. The people who wrote that song could not prove scientifically that the end result would be as pretty as it was. There's no way scientifically to write a song. They had to follow an internal conviction. And one of the differences between art and science is, in science, the actor, the observer, the person who brings about the effect, is completely independent of the effect. In art, although there are principles of artistic expression and production which definitely can be applied in an individual case, the result of one artist is not the same as the result of another artist. In other words, the effort that the individual puts in is a significant factor in the end result of the final product. Well, I think we're close to the end of the tape. So once again, thanks for listening. God bless. Hope you gained something from this. And really like to thank Pat Campbell for having me on again. And God bless. Keep in touch. And you can reach us at 55 Palin Road, number 38, Hopewell, Junction, New York, 12533.